And now it's time for the Wild Side News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
The National Park Service has a wonderful feature on their website called This Week's Park. We are going to visit a recent park of the week, an amazing historical park that dramatically tells the story of Wales and the Beacon of Freedom. Where is this park? Here's a clue. It's along a coastline. Want to know more? We'll float your boat when we return to the Wild Side News.
Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
From Nome to Nantucket, from Rome to Romania, from Woodville to New York City, welcome to the Wildside News on WS Radio. This is Sydney Wildsmith, and we have an extraordinary show today. The theme is pretty much wondrous diversity of nature, because we're going to be talking about a lot of different things that happen in nature coming up in segments 1, 2, and 3. I'm going to start off by offering a special birthday greeting to Buddha, who was born in 563. I always enjoyed his smiling face, and this was a guy with a great attitude. So, happy birthday, Buddha. I also want to encourage our listeners to call in today, because we have some great guests who will be talking about parks and trails and lots of interesting things. So do feel free to call in on our 800 number. It's toll-free. The number is 888-327-0061. And just as a little friendly reminder to some people out there, those who may know Edward Abbey, friends of his will be getting together for a campfire Saturday, May 1st in Moab. If you want more information about this, send me an email. Be happy to let you know. Well, in this first segment, we're going to talk to Fred Barrows, who is the superintendent of the New Bedford Whaling Historical Park. This is a really interesting place, and we'll be introducing you to a great feature on the National Park Service website, Park of the Week. The park embraces a bygone era, one which we look back, we might feel a little awkward as we look on it, a time when the whaling industry kept the night lights alive, and a time when the light of freedom enkindled the flames in the hearts of those who supported the Underground Railroad. It's interesting. We'll be talking with Fred in just a little bit. In our second segment, we'll have the great pleasure of talking with David M. Johns. Now, David works at the cutting edge of wildlife conservation issues around the globe, tracking progress in the emerging wildlife corridor and range management strategies. He's president of the Wildlands Project. Those of you who are hearing about corridors and range management issues around the globe might want to give Dave a call, again, at 888-327-0061. And in our third segment, we'll talk to a really amazing woman who writes books about national trails. Why? Because she's been on every single trail in the national trail system. That's Kathleen Cordes. And she'll fill you in and answer questions you might have about any trails in America. So it's a great show to think about calling in. The number again is 888-327-0061. Also, here's a special little treat for all of you out there. I'm going to be giving away a real prize. Some of you may have already discovered the secret words, but you'll have to adventure around the Wildside News website until you find our secret prize page. I haven't told anyone, not even my associate producer, Claire, how to win. So, if you, this is a good chance for you to actually go to the Wildside News website and go to the April 8th show page, because that's a little clue. Also, I welcome your emails. As a matter of fact, I want you to send me emails as you listen. So go to the website, wildsidenews.com, click on Contacts, and just shoot me off a little hello. Let me know that you're out there, who you are, give me some information about yourselves. I always love to hear from my listeners from all over the world. A little news item. We have so much to cover, I'm going to keep this somewhat brief. But this is exciting, and it's good news for you. We who love the wild places just got confirmation that wild places, specifically wilderness areas, have significant economic impact on people and communities living nearby. Now, a lot of us already know that. It's just that it now is being actually proven. The Wilderness Society just released a report entitled The Economic Benefits of Wilderness, Focus on Property Value Enhancement. Based on the analysis of numerous reports, the findings are as follows. Pay attention. Designated wilderness on federal lands enhances nearby property values. Higher property values are associated with lower town tax rates. And wilderness-enhanced property values would generate revenues for local community development. What's it mean? The closer you are to designated wilderness areas, the more your property is worth. If you want information about this, go to the Wilderness Society's website for all the details, and that's at www.wildernesssociety.org. Why is this important? I'm going to give you a little personal story. I'll try to make it brief, but a long time ago when I was in New Mexico, I built a house, bought some land, built a house, and just as I was about to really call it my own, an oil company decided that they wanted to look for oil within 100 yards of my home. Now, where I was, it was wide open spaces. There were no roads. There were no sounds. I had chosen to be there for the absolute beautiful silence and the extraordinary vistas, and I was now faced with the prospect that for the rest of my lifetime in that home, I might have an oil derrick in my backyard. Well, that was not very... I wasn't pleased with that. Sorry, I just didn't like that. It seemed difficult in the sense that no one else in my area had oil derricks in their backyard. So, you know, people naturally come together and try to figure out how they can protect themselves a little bit from that intrusion. And what I came to find out was that I didn't have the mineral lights. I knew that, but I mean, I never thought it would really affect me. And as it turns out, the oil company had the right to look for oil anywhere they wanted to, and it could have been literally on my land. And so this is one of the things that I came to understand, and that is that if I dug a hole, you know, in my yard, there's these things called domains. There's the surface domain and the subsurface domain. And the oil company owned the subsurface domain. So if I dug a hole and I found a chunk of gold, which actually could have happened because I was very close to a legendary gold mountain, the Ortiz in the Ortiz Mountains, if I had found a chunk of gold, I would have had to have paid the holder of that right for that gold because it belonged to them. But in this particular case, I was making the point that, hey, I own the surface rights, and if you come in and do things, you're affecting my domain, and that has economic impact on me. Except that there really wasn't any sort of evidence that was a viable legal point. Well, it's becoming more significant as the research comes in that wilderness values and vistas and things that relate to pure nature do have economic value. Why is that significant? Because what it means is this, is that as, you know, obviously we are all consumers, we utilize natural resources, but sometimes when it happens a little too close to us, it does affect us. We now have the right to say, you certainly have the right to do that. However, if you do, you're going to have to reimburse me for impacting my domain. That could have significance into the future and affect sort of where these things are happening. It's something to consider. So again, I'm going to we'll talk about more about that in the future. But just a reminder now, I want you to go to the Wildside News website and go to the April 8th page. That's actually today's page. And just kind of browse around because there is a prize available. And for the person who calls in first with the secret phrase, they're going to win a beautiful piece of art. And we'll talk about that when I get that caller on the line. So go there, look around. When you find it, give a call. The number is 888-327-0061. Okay, well, we have on the line Frank Barrows, who is with the National Park Service. He's the superintendent at the New Bedford Whaling National Historical Park. And the Park Service has a wonderful new feature on their website, which is called Park of the Week. And you can go to www.nps.org and click on Parks and Recreation tab, and there you are. Frank, whaling these days is a diminishing industry, but it certainly has not always been so. As a matter of fact, New Bedford had to have been one of the world's most significant whaling towns. Tell us about whaling as it once was and New Bedford's place in that historical period.
Just a little bit of clarification. I am the Parks Youth Programs Coordinator. I also do the web management and park publications. The superintendent is actually John Piltzecker.
I appreciate that. I'm sorry.
I just wanted to clarify that before we started.
Well, you're wise to do that. Sorry for the mix-up. Go ahead. But, Frank, tell us about whaling and the New Bedford Whaling National Historical Park. It's a very interesting place.
We were actually established back in 1996, so we're a pretty recent addition to the National Park System. And we were established to preserve and interpret the story of America's 19th century whaling. The block consists of 34 acres and a 13-block historic district, complete with cobblestone streets and historic lamp heads, and about 70 historic buildings and structures. And we're right on the water in New Bedford Harbor. The park's main partners are the New Bedford Whaling Museum, which has the world's premier collection of artifacts relating to American whaling. There's the Roach Jones Duff House and Garden Museum, and that is the only whaling merchant's home open to the public. New Bedford also has a lot of unique architecture. There's a lot of whaling mansions that were built here. The Seaman's Bethel is an old whaleman's chapel that was written about in Moby Dick, and that's located in the grounds of the historical park too. And the schooner Ernestina, which is a National Registered Landmark schooner that took immigrants from the Cape Verde Islands and was also an Arctic explorer at one time, one of its many lives as a schooner. And although you can't go in the home, the first free home of Frederick Douglass after he escaped from slavery is also located here in the park, right outside of the historic district. And those are some of the main attractions that are here today.
There's sort of an interesting juxtaposition of themes at the park in the sense that you focus on the whaling industry, and I'd like you to talk a little bit about that in terms of its significance at the time, but also you interpret the Underground Railroad and issues that related to abolitionism. Try to give us an understanding of why those two themes came together at your park.
Okay, well, the park's main focus is America's 19th century whaling. And we preserve the buildings within the historic district that help us to tell that story. The story of the Underground Railroad is a National Park Service initiative called the Network to Freedom, which is trying to kind of research some of these untold stories and make links between different sites associated with the Underground Railroad. New Bedford was actually one of the major stops on the Underground Railroad. There's an estimated about 300 to 700 escaped slaves that were living here in the city before slavery was abolished, with a total population of color of about 1,000. So that kind of tells you right there what the proportion was of escaped slaves living in the city. The reasons for that were partly because of the whaling industry. People could come here and get work. If I'm an escaped slave and I have slave catchers looking for me, where better to be than out on the ocean where it's not as easy to find me? There's also a large Quaker population here in the city at the time, which contributed to the city being a hotbed of abolition.
You know, it's interesting. A lot of people don't know this, but at one point, prior to the existence of the vast oil industries, actually whale oil was lit the world. Talk a little bit. We have about 2 minutes left here, so we'll have to kind of push on. But talk a little bit about whale and whales and whale oil and what that really meant.
Well, whale oil really did light the world, and New Bedford was the port where most of the whaling ships left out of, and it actually made the town very wealthy, and you can still see signs of that wealth here today. And later on, as electricity is discovered, there's still whaling happening, but now we're going into the Arctic, and we're hunting bowheads looking for the baleen found in their mouths for things like corsets. So the whaling kind of evolved and then completely declined and is no longer legal in the lower 48 states. It's actually legal in Alaska now, where they hunt whales for survival. But yeah, they are still limited on the number of whales they can catch.
Now, last week you were the featured park of the week, and if people go, as I say, to the National Park Service website and look in previous parks of the week, they can get information about the New Bedford Whaling National Historical Park, which also includes some wonderful photographs of some of the buildings that you'll see there, the historic model ship. What's the story on that? That sounds interesting.
There's a half-scale whale ship model that would be found in the Whaling Museum, and you can actually climb right aboard, and it's very detailed, and it's an exact half-scale replica of what a real whale ship would look like. There is one full-scale whale ship that can be found. It's actually a New Bedford ship called the Charles Morgan, but that's down in Mystic, Connecticut now.
Well, Frank, thanks for calling. Let's do this again sometime. We'll talk again.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about park programs, but for now, just go to our website and take a look at some of our summer programs that are going to be happening. It's an exciting time for us.
Thank you. You're listening.